Oh man. Welcome to Deep Tracks.
Empty, dude.
Only. Yeah, we're done. So we usually start the podcast off without the guest, but today's guest is so charming that we're gonna start out with the guest today. Today we have on the show Captain Admiral Corey Wong of the Corey
Wong
Band.
Just recently added Admiral to the title.
Yeah.
Appreciate you recognizing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happy to be here.
I want to stay true to the script here.
Thank you.
Yeah, your people said for sure to read that one first. So
yeah, you can cross that off.
We got that out of the way.
He got the list as well.
Yeah, he's here in the studio in town with his band here playing in Oklahoma City at the Tower Theater on 98.9.
Is the Tower Theater dope? I have not been in there
yet. It is dope.
It is, yeah.
It is. It's a venue run by people who care and people who kind of like, you know what they're doing.
And by musicians.
Yeah. You know those venues that kind of pop up, you know, they're kind of, you know, venture capitalist funded. And it's just like, let's get people to sell tickets and come into this box. And it doesn't sound very good. Yeah.
That was very specific.
That's what we're getting into?
I know exactly where
you're We have about. Some of those venues, but we do have other venues that are ran by people who care. And the Tower Theater is one of those venues.
I like that.
23rd Street. So you're in good hands. It's going to be great. And it pulls a good crowd. So it's going to be just fine. So we start off every day. I kind of tease Philip a little bit. And so we'll tease Philip a little bit. And then we'll get into what we call band names.
Can't tease my hair.
Your hair is looking good today, though.
You have hair?
No, but you can't tease it, like with the teaser.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Little deep.
That was a good one. Yeah, wow.
That's a homonym.
You know what
does it? Is that a homonym? Where it's the same word, but spelled differently, but means different things? Is it homonyms?
Like Job and Job?
Maybe. Job and Job. Or I was thinking of like...
Like there and there?
Like right
and there?
Right and right.
Right and right
are homonyms. Like,
oh, like
right
left
with
and
my
left.
Hand and right and left.
And like left and left.
So like those two are homonyms.
Yeah, somebody left, like the verb left.
I was doing one that doesn't work.
Okay, so those are two different things. I think homonyms is where they're spelled different, but their pronunciation is the same.
Oh, okay.
But
so that's right and right. But what is left and left? Like I'm left-handed, but I left the building.
What's
the word for that?
What is that? You know.
I know.
Did you make a 21 on the ACT?
Man, I got 22.
Did you get 22? I got a 23. Yeah. And that was my best score. I took it three times.
A little better.
You took the ACT three times?
Yeah.
Me Let's too.
Say, how many times did you take
it? I did.
Once?
Once? What'd you get? You seem like a 30s guy. You're in the 30s.
We don't need to get into it.
It's a 30.
No, he's like a 34. He's like a 34 guy.
No. I was not a 34.
33?
If I say it, you don't have to just wink if
just,
I'm right.
Yeah, do 33? Thumbs up higher or lower.
33, 32,
31. Well, I haven't had a chance to respond yet. Now,
okay, 33.
You've said the number. How about that? I'll just you've said the number at some point. Yes.
We've said 21 and 34. So
earlier I told him I was 37.
It could be
it
either
was
way.
A 36, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you go to U of M? Did you go to University of Minnesota?
I did. I actually had a friend.
What'd you study?
Two friends that I live with both got 36s on their ACTs.
Oh my gosh. So you were like you're in the smart class, you're in the smart club in school.
I don't know.
Were you in enrichment, gifted and talented?
They had several words for folks like myself. I think.
What was your favorite word though for you?
Well, I think when they say gifted, they actually mean something different than, it's like the folks that have ADHD that.
Exactly. Yeah.
That also maybe have the thing where they can focus really heavily on one thing
and figure it out front to back.
I guess. Yeah. But
yeah.
So it's, but I never knew that was what they meant.
I think we called it enrichment in my class.
I've never heard that.
And studied things like ballet, the JFK assassination, Bosselwood Towers and Bridges.
Are you saying you studied these?
We read Watership Down.
So you were in.
I was in enrichment. Yeah.
I actually studied Bosselwood Bridges.
Yeah.
Much less sturdy.
Isn't it really frustrating when it comes down to it? No pun intended. The load is unbearable.
It's good.
So we're going to start out with band names. Band names.
I can't even.
Come on. Do a theme song with me.
Band.
Band names. on 98.9. What
you're just coming up with band names.
Yeah, so this is
you
the
do
deal.
This segment every podcast. You come up with band names.
Every podcast we come up with different band names. So
is
the
there
deal is
there requirements per episode? What's the requirements today?
There aren't requirements. Well, there's needs, and the needs are we got another band name, the genre, where they're from helps. Things like debut album, and then who they're out on tour with. Like, where do they belong in the industry? So, do you want to start out today?
This is nice intellectual property to own as well. That you
okay,
can
so
sell.
This is yeah, what we so, do a disclaimer yeah. at the beginning every single episode. And these are our band names, and you can't use them. And if you use them, we will sue you. We'll come after you with a...
Cease and desist.
A fleet of suits.
It is fleet of suits. Crap.
You're supposed to come at you with a fleet of suits. Unless you email us and ask us if you can use it, then the rights are all yours. Or use it just a simple email. So
that's the part he doesn't like. Corey's holding on to his.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna need a Venmo request or something.
That's fine. So you can sell yours. You can totally sell yours.
No, I don't have any. I don't know what we're doing yet. Come at me.
All right. So do you want to go first? Or you want me
no,
to go first?
I don't want to go.
All right.
First.
So today the band name is Shark Chum Wave.
Shark Chum Wave?
Dude,
Shark
so Chum many Wave. People are coming after this one.
Shark Chum Wave is a kind of like a red dirt punk band. So like they are from the plains and it's like they kind of, so the singer has like a Southern accent but it's punk music. So he's like singing like, I went down to my car and it wouldn't start, you know? So it's like red dirt punk. That's what I call it, which is a real genre.
But I feel like Shark Chum Wave, they've also... They probably cross over into some other stuff that's just like general, hip, cool. It feels cool to listen to this music. So they probably transcend their genre themselves. Like they might be out on the road with Japanese Breakfast, Men I Trust, Krungbin.
So, and how that happened is they got asked to do a song on the Transformers soundtrack.
Oh.
And that kind of helped them like mellow out because they had to play with like a click track and they had to have strings, you know?
Was there an actor, producer, somebody involved in the Transformers production that requested them?
I'm pretty sure Michael Bay requested them because his son was into Shark Chum Wave.
Got
so it.
It
was kind of like a thing for his son. I also don't know if Michael Bay has kids.
Can you name another person that helped out with Transformers?
No, Shia LaBeouf.
Okay.
Shia LaBeouf.
The person
I've only
with
seen
the,
one.
With the
only one I've seen. That's the first
with
one.
With the kin who's a fan of something.
Yeah.
I've had several experiences with that. We can get there later. It's kind of fun.
With Michael Bay?
We'll get there. No, not with Michael Bay, though.
Mm.
But Michael Bay, he's a fan of the band. He had to have them.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going on a click track.
Philip thought you were talking about your band.
Yeah, I did. I got really excited.
You're really excited.
But, no, I actually, yeah. I don't know what Michael Bay looks like. I'm not familiar with his work. Maybe I've seen it.
Yeah, it's mostly seen, I think, in Transformers, the movie, where they turn the
He's exclusive to Transformers?
Listen,
he started out in the industry and he hit it big.
If you put a flame to my hand and say, name another Michael Bay movie, I don't think I could. Listen, I've been having kids for 10 years. I don't know. We're just getting caught up with the Avengers stuff.
I couldn't have told you who
I've
did
seen
Transformers.
Them all.
Yeah, they're so
I've
good.
Seen every piece of MCU except for the last two, the new Thor, Love and Thunder, and Wakanda Forever.
Yeah.
Wakanda Forever, I have to wait till I go home, see you with my kids because we've been watching all the Marvel stuff.
I think that's fair. I'm on Ant-Man and Wasp.
Great.
That's the next
movie.
One.
Great movie.
Name a Paul Rudd movie that's not great. It does. I don't think it exists.
You know what's interesting is that movies can put together these monster casts and like that's part of the thing, but there's less of that in the music world. There's not as much just
super bands.
Every year, there's all these huge super bands that come together.
That'd be
dope. We should do more of that.
We should. We should do like Audioslave kind of thing.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. I sometimes
but like every year there's five of them.
Yeah.
It
would
That's
be really fun.
Idea.
Would it work though? Or would it have to have money to support it to make it work? Or would it be good to stand on its own? Because you could take that ideology to the NBA and it almost never works.
Yeah, but I think in art and is there money involved and whatever, like it doesn't cost that much money to make a record nowadays if you do it.
Yeah, just get some UA stuff.
I guess if you come from the old school where you had million-dollar budgets to make your records. You're used to that sort of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Maybe it does cost you a lot to make records, but I feel like you could just go in the studio for a week.
So how do we go about this?
I would like to see an itemized bill on a million-dollar record.
I would too.
I'd like to see like what costs what. What's the five-figure cost in there that's really weighing it down? Is it the individual musicians? Like the hired
producers, I don't know.
The songwriters?
I think there's a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted energy. More so, I think, in movies.
Yeah.
I was just talking about this last night. I haven't seen the Mission Impossible movies, but somebody was telling me they did 130 takes of Tom Cruise. He got his own helicopter license or something?
He did, and they paid for that.
Yeah, so like, he flies up in a helicopter and then jumps out of the helicopter.
Yeah.
They did 130 takes. There's no, we're professionals here. We are talking about the top cast in Hollywood. Really, did you hire the cinematographer that's like, oh, I don't really know how to get this shot. I'm going to need 130 tries. Like, in what world do you need 130 tries at something?
How long did that take?
And on top of
What happens to the helicopter? Is anybody else in it? Do they burn a helicopter every scene?
They
You should YouTube.
Gotta be co-pilot.
Him doing this scene because it's fascinating.
I've heard it's dope.
Is it fascinating?
It's crazy. Yeah, it is.
He's amazing though.
They have all these cameras facing him attached to the helicopter and it's just incredible.
He's like in the enrichment of acting.
While he's like flying a helicopter and doing a twist and going down.
Sounds dope. That sounds dope.
But he trained. He had to get all of his hours to become, I sound like a huge Tom Cruise fan. I mean.
Okay, so you're not?
I like Tom Cruise.
Well, I got to respect like his respect for the craft.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's impressive.
You got to give it up for his dedication.
It is stupendous. You saw the Top Gun one. What's the new one? It's called Top Gun, right?
I haven't seen
Maverick. People are going to be like, dude, Colt's movie IQ is super low. And it really
it's okay.
is.
Is it called Maverick? Right.
It really but is. It's called Maverick. It's called Maverick.
Yeah,
that's right.
My thought is, I think a lot of wasted money goes into, we have the opportunity. We have the capability of doing 130 takes.
Yeah.
Why don't you say, okay, 10 tries. 10 tries?
I think 10 tries and some editing and a nice filter, you could get a great take. I don't know if you need 130.
I kind of suck at darts, but if you gave me 10 turns at darts, I'm going to give you a bullseye. If I have dedicated my life to the craft, if I've dedicated my life to the craft of filmmaking,
you would get it.
I'm going to get it in 10 tries.
Of course you are. Especially
130?
We need to challenge this later, I think, with something.
Well, the only thing I'm doing later is looking up like Tom Cruise training videos on YouTube. I'm probably going to do a deep dive. We finished up here in about an hour. That's what I'm going to be doing the rest of the afternoon. I'm going to light this candle that I have in here, spray some of that lime coriander I had going on that burned you guys out. And then, yeah, we're going to do that. Okay, so Corey, I want you, just in case, so this is a show for fans of music instruments, but also for the significant others. So why don't you profile your band and your music as if somebody's never heard of it, just in case they haven't, in the rare chance that nobody's heard of your music before. How would you describe it to us?
I guess at this point I have three bands.
Okay.
I have Corey Wong, go figure.
Yeah.
That's the one that takes up the majority of my time.
Yeah. And it didn't take you long to name that band.
It actually did.
Oh,
it actually did.
It probably did.
We can get there. I have another band called Wolfpack. That's kind of my main project, but only takes about 30 days, year of commitment.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's like, that's my main.
That's the mainstay.
Main thing, but it takes so little commitment. We have a side band called the Fearless Flyers.
Yep.
And I play guitar in both of these bands. And with Corey Wong, I also play guitar and sometimes bass and other instruments as well.
If you had to genre out this music, what would it be? What's this called?
Wolfpack is more funk, pop. Some people have called it bedroom funk because it's all recorded live in the room and not in really nice studios. It's just kind of throw the setup together and we make it work.
I would never guess that.
It
sounds incredible.
I call it millennial funk. That's what I call
it. I like that. I like that. I'm into that.
When I'm trying to describe Wolfpack to people, I'm like, it's like millennial funk. It's like if young people were making funk music,
Yeah.
That's what it is. Because that's what it is.
The Fearless Flyers.
Is that offensive or?
Not offensive at all. Every one of us in the band falls into that category. So there's no reason to be offended.
I'm glad we went through that.
But whether I was offended
whether
or not.
You're offended or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's okay. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, millennial. No,
some people are offended by certain terms. It's okay.
Fearless I'm Flyers. Not, yeah. Let's fly to the left over here. Yep. What is that? That's another project. You play guitar in it. Who else plays guitar?
Tom Cruise flies helicopters in the band.
That's how I got into it.
Yeah, that's how we got.
Huge Tom Cruise fan.
Yeah, you're a Tom
Cruise guy. That's
what
the Wikipedia page says.
Yeah.
No, it's a side project of Wolfpack. And so Joe Dart and I from Wolfpack are in it. And then we have Mark Lettieri, who plays baritone guitar in the band.
Oh, wow.
He's from the band Snarky Puppy.
Yes.
And Nate Smith is the drummer.
Yeah.
And this, I guess, kind of was our idea of starting a super group.
That is
funk.
That's a super group to me.
You did it. Yeah.
So that one also takes very little commitment every year. Maybe 15, 20 days commitment a year.
Yeah. 15, 20. Okay. So we're getting to 365. We're
like when you say 15 or 20, you mean that's how many days you're together writing and or playing or how many hours of seeing each other?
No, that's about, that's anytime we've done, we record normally about an album a year and we go in the studio for 3 days. So it, you know, one day is flying to LA, 3 days of recording, and then a day of flying home.
Yeah.
That's 5 days.
That's a nice schedule.
And then a handful of gigs here and there.
Yeah. How do you decide where to play and when? I want to ask that question because I feel like there's a high demand for the live aspect of say Wolfpack or Fearless Flyers.
Yeah.
So you kind of get, you guys are kind of at an advantage where you get to pick where you play, when, and how often. How do you decide those things? Does that make sense?
Yeah. The Wolfpack and Fearless Flyers live strategy is different than most others. It's more of a scarcity thing. And with Wolfpack, we've historically just done more big event kind of destination shows. And we've done some semi-traditional touring, but not everybody in the band loves touring and not everybody in the band would love the tour schedule and that sort of thing. And there's just different demands that touring takes out of a person and out of a group dynamic. And to keep things really fun and exciting, we just don't do a ton of stuff. So every time we get together, it kind of feels like a reunion.
Yeah.
Big love fest. It's great. Family members end up coming out to shows and it's all, it's fun. Parents come out and, but as far as deciding what shows to do, you know, we get a lot of offers for festivals and certain things just feel right either on the artistic side, the financial side, of course. And then as far as playing live shows, headlining shows or ticketed shows, I don't know. We're kind of figuring out how and what to do for that. So historically, we've done a little bit of a East Coast play, a West Coast play, and Red Rocks.
Yeah.
And then we took a couple years off and, we're trying to figure out what the next steps are. But, we have some things in mind that we're trying to figure out. And Fearless Flyers, a lot of that depends on the Corey Wong touring schedule and the Nate Smith, Brittany Howard schedule, because he's Brittany Howard's music director as well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And Mark's personal touring schedule and the Snarky Puppy touring schedule. And then Joe plays with Theo Katzman and Joey Dossick. So there's a lot of things.
Do you guys have just one big Google calendar together? That's what it sounds like we need to do.
Kinda, yeah. We had a blackout calendar, but then there's a Fearless Flyers blackout calendar. There's a Wolfpack blackout calendar. And the Flyers one is just, it's really hard. So basically I just send a text out to everybody. All right, who's available? What days? Ever.
Yeah.
For the next 3 years.
What are some windows?
Yeah.
And then it ends up being, okay, these 3 days are open. Let's find something to do in there.
The strategy feels like we've got 3 days, so let's just play, I don't know, let's play Red Rocks, let's play Madison Square Garden, and let's play the O2 Arena and go to England. That's what it feels
Which
like.
Which sounds like, yeah.
That's not what, quite, but sometimes can seem like that. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like it. What's different? How's the Corey Wong segment different than the other things? Like different than Fearless Flyers, different than Wolfpack? What are people like if they go to the show tonight? What's different?
Well, it is a little more
special,
centered around the guitar.
Yeah.
And with my stuff, it's much more arranged. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more of it is arrangement focused. And I also have a very big band with a horn section, and I'm just a lot more surgical with the arrangements, with the compositions and that sort of stuff. Where a lot of the Wolf and Flyers stuff, it has the arrangements and it has all the composition things, but it's kind of got a little bit more freedom to it, which kind of gives it a special fingerprint.
Uh-huh.
But also with the Corey Wong thing, I'm a little more also kind of jam and jazz adjacent than the other bands.
Yeah.
So we'll stretch out, we'll explore, but it's all built into the arrangement. So a lot of my stuff is most of my stuff is very highly arranged, but built into that arrangement is a bunch of jumping points where it's, all right, let's go to the cosmos and let's see how to land back here. We know what our jumping point is and we know what our landing point is.
Yeah.
But it could kind of go anywhere. Yeah. Some of those moments are built in. It's fun.
How do you find creative energy for something like that? So for a lot of people, being in two bands would be plenty, mm-hmm. and then that would pretty much knock them out for the year. Do you find like being in these other bands, maybe creativity is infinite and exponential when you're around it more and it produces like you want to do more, or do you find yourself running out of energy and ideas? How do you find that balance?
I guess there's two ways that I would answer that. The fast, just on the creativity alone, is I've always had the philosophy that creativity is a vine that blossoms rather than a gas tank that empties.
We say that one more time just so everybody can write it down that's listening.
Creativity is a vine that blossoms rather than a gas tank that empties.
Mm-hmm.
And if you surround yourself with creative people and if you surround yourself with creative environments, it can just help inspire you to be more creative. So when I'm in these different settings, I get inspired and I get that energy in different ways from different people. And also, I guess the other side of the answer is that my role in the three bands is very different, both on the leadership side and as far as the playing side. Yeah. So with Wolfpack, at this point, it's a band and Jack Stratton is the band leader. He has the final say. He's the visionary. He's the genius behind it. But it's all just kind of like, it's band. So he wants me to have my unique voice and my fingerprint on the thing, but I need to be very aware of, okay, this is what the focus is. It's not about me the majority of the time, but how can I slip in? How can I find something that adds artistic and creative value, but doesn't get in the way or whatever? And with then moving one step further to the Fearless Flyers, where it's a band, we're all band members, but I'm kind of, I guess, the band leader of that, only out of organization. I mean, anybody could be the band leader in that band, but out of the logistics and I don't know. Out of the logistics and whatever, I end up being the band leader for that. So, and I think in that case, it's also, I feel like I'm a good band leader for that because I have nothing to prove. I don't really care. I mean, not that anybody in the band does, but I think that they trust me that I will make decisions that are not based on my own personal gain, that it is for the good of the band, and that any musical decision in the studio, I don't really care if I get my due or like, oh, I need to have this guitar solo so I can let people know.
You got to leave that in. Bring that up in the mix.
Yeah. Any of that. It's just whatever. A lot of times I'll end up, I default to giving more to the other cats. And then, I've worked more on helping with the production side and the writing side and, the overall vision of the band with Jack from Wolfpack. We kind of, have been working on that together. And then with Corey Wong, it's kind of one step further where I am the band leader. I can kind of do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And of course, I have my own judgment on what I feel is appropriate or what's tasteful for something. Uh-huh. And then, it's pretty much my vision and I'm putting the team together and I'm hiring everybody out to play. It's pretty much the same band all the time. Sometimes on records, like studio albums, I'll do different players for certain things, but I work with Michael Nelson, who's a horn arranger. So he and I work on horn arrangements together and we have a good vision together and good understanding of each other's artistry. And then, you know, putting all of that together and just being, showcasing myself more as band leader in that. So, you know, a lot of people would assume that you go to a guitar show and you're going to see a certain type of thing just because historically guitar led bands and guitar shows are like, hey, look at me, blah, blah, blah. And it's just all guitar, guitar, guitar. Yeah. And for me, obviously I love the guitar.
Sure.
And I'm a guitar cat, but
yeah,
sometimes it gets to be a little much. So if you're watching a band for 90 minutes or 2 hours or whatever it is, and it's just guitar, guitar, guitar being shoved down your throat, it's sometimes
exhausting.
A bit much. Yeah, yeah. And even as a guitar player, it gets to be a bit much. So a lot of what I bring to the table is in the composition, production, writing, building shows, building the entertainment and moments in the shows, and kind of facilitating the entire experience, you know, where it's not just, it's not as much about,
yeah,
look at everything I can do on guitar, because there's a lot more that I can do on guitar than I show in all of my shows,
mm-hmm.
but I don't necessarily want to hear that all the time.
Right. So I feel like a guitar solo or instrumental solo has finite joy.
Sure.
You know? And, so that's why I feel like other aspects of the show to come in to really enhance the experience are super important.
Yeah.
You said something about theater showing up today. Is that what you said? There's a little bit of theater involved?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going to, well, there's multiple ways of putting on a show or playing a concert.
Uh-huh.
You can get up there and just play a concert. You just play the songs from the record, or you can really build a memorable show that feels like I was there at that tour. I saw that tour.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And, you know, having something that feels more unique, something that feels like a real experience, that feels like a real show.
Yeah.
And for me, I think it's important to build moments into a show, build moments that are specific to this tour or specific to this configuration, because that way it makes it a more special experience for the audience. It makes also career-wise something that has more longevity. Oh, what are they going to do for this tour? What's the special thing about this tour? Keeps people, and it lets people know, hey, every year I'm not just going to come back and do the same thing. I'm going to build something new and creative and interesting every time. And when you build those moments in the show, it really helps it to stand out. It gives it checkpoints and anchor points in the show. And it also, you know, it gives people just something more interesting to talk about the next day.
Than just the songs they heard.
Yeah.
I went and heard my favorite songs.
Yeah.
Which isn't always a bad thing.
Totally.
I mean, if you're going to go hear a singer-songwriter, that's...
Yeah.
You're not going to get a lot of theater, you know? As I hear my songs, you know?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Which you also do a great job of on your show.
Thank you.
It's so entertaining.
Thanks.
Do you want to say more about that?
That's great.
Who does that? Who else does that really well? Does like the planning of the show, like who inspired you to, I want to do something like that?
The place
maybe it wasn't a band.
No, the place where I really learned it was playing with Ben Rector.
Mm.
Ben really builds great moments in his shows for tours. And I was touring with him and his band for a couple years, a few years. I don't know. Time is long lost.
I think
continues
that's where,
to be lost.
That's where we,
that's where we met.
We connected that first time.
Yes.
Yeah.
We played somewhere in Edmond, Oklahoma. Some outdoor.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know.
You have a good memory.
Yeah. We came what here to the that? Other shop. This must have been 2015.
That was, and you, yeah, you had some album and you had some song on there called, I think it was called Minneapolis.
You had some
Welcome
song
to Minneapolis. Yes.
Welcome to Minneapolis. And I met you and then I went and looked you up on Spotify and then like, I felt like it was like a finding a new way to hear and play guitar. And I went home and I showed my wife. I was like, you got to hear this guy play guitar. This is so great. And she was like, it's so joyful. And
oh,
it was,
that's cool.
It just filled the house. It was really great.
Yes.
Is that still available on Spotify? That
of course.
First CPS is still
oh,
out
yeah.
there? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Man.
Anything before that, I wish it was not anywhere to be found. You know, like those albums you made in college?
Mine are still up.
They're so,
I still got
yeah,
them.
I love finding them.
We should,
yeah, it's fine. it's fine. Whatever. As long as people look at the date.
Some of it's terrible.
Oh, this is, yeah.
I mean, I wish, like, my, at home, sometimes when we want to make each other laugh, like, I will say some of the lyrics from my first songs.
Yeah.
And it's just, it just immediately just drains the blood out of your face. And it's like, God, I cannot believe I wrote that down. Yeah. Let alone put it on an album.
I know.
Uh-huh.
I have those. But yeah, Ben Rector, he builds a great show. He builds great tours and builds in good moments. And I saw that just from watching the audience on that tour. Oh, this is really, it feels like there's anchor points.
Yeah.
It feels like there's something special. The look on people's faces. Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Phones come up.
Yeah.
People want to get a video of it. And then also just a lot of the big pop production acts. You know, you look at artists like Katy Perry, where there's just so much theater involved in her tours, where I was like, dang, that's really cool. We don't do a ton of that in the instrumental music world. I mean, especially in the instrumental music world, but kind of in my, in the genres that I'm adjacent with, there's not a lot of that. And I think it's interesting to build. And if you want to have a more broad appeal, you have to do something more than just the music, because the music, of course, should speak for itself. And that is number one for me as well. But I think it also is important to make sure that you recognize that it's not all just musicians in the crowd, mm-hmm. and it's not all people who care that you can play, that you're, you know, implying a D minor 7 flat 5 over the G7, you know, like, sick. It's like, okay, whatever, you know, or,
yeah.
Oh, cool, he's doing the Lydian dominant thing over this, and then he's going into whole tone, and then it's like, okay, whatever. You know, a lot of people care about that, but
yeah,
the majority of the world doesn't.
Sure.
And I think it's cool to not make your audience, your entire audience, feel alienated if they don't feel like they're in on it.
Uh-huh.
So you can invite them in on other aspects of the show that don't sacrifice the integrity of the music. You right. just, you can do something entertaining. You can build special moments that also really have a lot of musical value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said something earlier about Ben's show and anchor points and then phones coming up. As a musician on the stage, how do you feel when the phones come up and people want to capture the moment in video on phones? How does it make you feel?
I don't really care either way. I think, well, personally, it's fun to sit backstage after the show and look and watch and see, and I can see, okay, how's the front of house engineer doing? If it translates on a phone,
sure.
Yeah.
All right, good. I'm hearing everything I should in the mix.
Uh-huh.
And also just kind of getting the vantage point of the audience. It also helps me know what parts of the show are really working well when you see the phones come up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's a reason. What's the reason why these people thought that at this moment they should film it?
It's like a little litmus test.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And, in the same way that I'll watch the way that people move or see what people are paying attention to, sometimes we'll be playing a song and I'm watching the audience and there's something happening over here that they should be watching, but the eyes are kind of going back and forth. It's like, oh, you don't know what you're supposed to be focusing on right now.
Uh-huh.
It's clearly supposed to be this. Okay, I need to change what I'm doing to make sure we need to change the arrangement or change the treatment, because what you're supposed to be focusing on, I'm not really seeing it clear in the audience. Where, mm-hmm. Most of the time you want it to be very clear on what people are supposed to be focusing on. So the phones coming out helps me get a little bit of a test for that. But I mean, as long as it's not completely distracting to the people around, as long as you're respectable about how often and how much you're doing it. I mean, the reality is people are just on their phones all the time. So I think, it's, get a couple shots if you need to.
Yeah.
Something you really want to remember, great. But also,
be present. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, the majority of the show, just enjoy it and take it in for what it is,
Yeah.
I think it's always funny whenever, to record something. I understand it for, posting to social media, but who goes back to their phone and listens to the concert that they were at and experienced in real life?
So, yeah, I recorded an 8-minute version of Slow Dancing in a Burning Room with John Mayer on my Razor.
Uh-huh.
So I had a Razor phone. This was back when we had Razors, and then I recorded it. But then I never went back and watched it.
Yeah. And you were in the moment, man, I'm going to watch
this. I can't wait to watch it on my Razor.
I realized, I feel like a long time ago, that I was like, oh man, I've been to some awesome shows that I recorded and I never go back to it. So I'm just like, maybe I'll grab a little snapshot or whatever, but I'm going to be here and present.
Where is your favorite venue? Do you have a favorite venue that you play at? That you like, where you remember like, oh, we're going to play at?
There's a handful. Tonight. Red Rocks, of course.
Duh.
It's incredible. Madison Square Garden was great for a lot of reasons.
I bet that green room's nice.
Did you just play there like one night? Or was it
we just did one night. Is the green room the locker room? Wouldn't that make
sense? No, I wanted it to be though.
I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it?
I don't
it?
Think, yeah, but then they'd have to.
Because they're not playing. They're not playing
I know,
night.
But it's like their personal stuff in there.
Mixed with your personal stuff. You got skin in the game too.
Yeah.
You're bringing
Yeah, but they're there so regularly. I don't know. They're like on salary and stuff, you know?
I'm on salary. This is fine.
But in Europe, there's a place called Paradiso in Amsterdam that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The Olympia in Paris is incredible. There's a lot of wonderful venues out there.
Yeah. Do you like playing overseas? Do you enjoy
I do.
It?
Yeah. It's interesting because the type of music that I play in the, I mean, a lot of people consider me jam, jazz, funk, whatever. And also kind of crossing over to other things. But in a lot of those genres, it's really hard to break into Europe. So it's a tough time. It's several years of really hard touring there, where for whatever reason, I've been able to break through there in a way that my shows oftentimes there are bigger than my US shows. And it's really fun. The crowds just have a different energy. And also with instrumental music, I think in general, there's a different type of connection to instrumental music in Europe than there is here, which is totally fine. But I think it's maybe...
just in case you're offended, totally fine.
No, I mean, I grew up in the US with our art programs and just like the funding constantly getting cut from our band programs and whatever and from different things that... For whatever reason, I don't know. I was not the one making those decisions, but in Europe, there's a little bit more emphasis on the arts, maybe a little more education and exposure to some of those, even on the radio and just kind of in the general zeitgeist there. So I think people connect with the music maybe in a little bit of a different way than they do here.
Yeah.
And that's a complete generalization. There's obviously a lot of fans in the US that connect on the deepest of levels. But
sure. I think it's interesting because you don't see things that are different very often. You're like, that's different. But I mean, the first time that you do experience a band like Wolfpack, you know, if you haven't before, it is like, this is very different. And it's not just different audibly, it's different visually too. Like the whole concept of like, we're not spending a lot of money on our, I hope it's okay to say, but we're not spending a lot of money on our videos and how we're making them and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we're
just straight doing on like, iPhone.
This
dude.
Is exactly, you know, and then we're going to put like a cartoon bird in this video to add some joy. And I think that was one of the first videos I saw. And I was like, this makes me so happy. So it is very different, but in a different direction. I feel like a lot of musicians are spawns from who they listen to pretty early on.
Sure.
But how did you land on like the type of music that you're doing today? Kind of between all the three bands that, because there is kind of a similar thread between all three. I would say they're all very different, but there is a similar thread. Like how did you land on something like that? And why aren't you in like a heavy metal band?
I think some of it has to do with, well, let's trace it back. So when I was growing up, my favorite bands were things like Weezer, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah. Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake, The Aquabats, you know, the whole ska thing. Green Day, Blink 182.
Yeah.
Then it was Dave Matthews, John Mayer.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
Yeah. You're going through my CD.
Yes.
You're going through
my exactly. CD right. Now. And then I grew up in Minneapolis, and there's so much Prince in the air and in the water.
Yeah.
And a lot of the musicians that I grew up playing under, cutting my teeth with, or as mentors, were all Prince alumni. So I naturally got a lot of the funk inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
And also my dad is a huge jazz nerd. So huge jazz fan. Record collection as big as the wall here.
Yeah.
And it's organized by, you know, here's the CTI catalog, the Blue Note catalog, the Columbia catalog,
yeah,
the ECM catalog. Here's all the classic rock stuff. So
Man, that is That's categorized.
Yeah.
I love that.
So
it's a museum.
Yeah, exactly. So I listened to a lot of jazz growing up. I listened to a lot of jazz fusion, a lot of funk, a lot of different things that kind of sparked who I am now and what I like to play and why I have the versatility that I do when I play. And I don't know, I've just been a rhythm section junkie and, you know, all those things growing up at the era I did with the, you know, the listening at home that was happening. Yeah. And the area that I grew up in just kind of coincidentally landed of, you know, it makes a lot of sense explaining that to me of why I do what I do now.
Yeah. Did you get paid to do anything else while you're growing up besides play music? Did you have a job?
So in high school, we had a very good CAD program, like drafting, architectural drafting and engineering drafting. And when I was 14, I started really diving into the CAD software, AutoCAD, and would take classes. I mean, literally every day of high school, I took CAD classes.
Yeah.
And
so I got a 34 on the SAT.
14 years old?
No. Wow. I finished all of the CAD program by the time I was done with my sophomore year. So then the teacher kind of created a specialized program for me. And then there was some sort of career day.
Yeah.
And there was an architect that came and I showed him some of my blueprints of things that I had done. And he said, you should be an architect someday. Like, okay. So he's like, well, come work for me. So I worked for him as a CAD drafter.
At what age?
16.
16. Okay.
Yeah. So I worked under a couple other cats, but I was doing like, you know, a lot of what we were doing was the big car dealerships around the Twin Cities area.
Oh yeah.
So the main guys were doing that. And it was like, oh, this guy also wants to build a cabin up in the north of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Here's the plans that I have for him. Will you make the blueprints?
Yeah.
So I'd do some of their side projects and then help with some of the, just like the more simple stuff for them to do. And it was really fun. I was great at that. It's where I really learned. I mean, I grew up around computers. My dad's an IBMer. So we had computers in the house.
What's an IBMer for
Oh, he worked for IBM.
Okay. Gotcha.
The IBM.
Yeah.
Is that up in the Twin Cities?
Yeah. There is my dad grew up in Rochester. So there's you know, whatever there.
A plant.
Yes. I was going to say plant, but I don't think it's a plant. I don't know what.
A plant facility.
There is a facility. Yeah. I don't know what it is. But yeah. So learning the software there and really learning computers and how to navigate software, that happened in high school. And I worked for an architect, went to school at first for architecture, then realized like, no, I just love drafting. I love software.
Yeah.
I mean, I do love architecture, but it wasn't necessarily the thing. Yeah. I didn't see myself doing it long term.
Yeah.
But all of that work helped me really understand software. So now I can rip through Pro Tools, Logic, Final Cut, any of that.
Just, I need some of that.
Yeah.
Philip, what were you doing? What were you doing at 16?
Yeah, seriously. I'm trying to.
So what was your job at 16?
I mean, what grade was I in whenever I was 14?
You were in let's start 10th or 11th 14. Grade. Yeah. 10th or 11th grade.
Oh, gosh, no. I graduated 20.
I had a paper route, and I was detailing cars. My dad gave me some equipment to detail cars.
Nice. Like,
you should run your own business. And I did.
You did?
I do a very good job. Yeah. Colts Detail, you know.
Colts Detail.
Yeah. And I could do two cars on a Saturday. And if I did two cars, I was $120 cash.
That's a killer job.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Dude, that's 16. Dope.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Actually, for a second, my friend Trung and I had a side business where we would install car stereos in people's cars. That was another thing.
Yeah.
Because I was super into cars and whatever. So I learned how to rip apart car stereos and install subwoofers and, aftermarket speakers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, put in the Sirwin Vegas.
Make it shake,
let's do
baby.
This thing.
Oh, man.
And I would also, you know, kind of mod certain things. So I found this vintage ice cream truck.
You had a vintage ice cream truck?
No. He found it. The audio thing. The thing that plays the music.
Oh, the PA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ice cream truck PA.
What are you talking about?
I put it in my Nissan Maxima. So then I could...
Oh.
I'm playing animal noises. I'm playing songs. I had the PA coming out of the hood of my car. So I'd be at a stoplight like, yo! Let's go. I'm driving through the high school parking lot yelling at people or like, man.
It works great at the car pickup line, I'm sure.
You know, man.
Or drop off. Drop off would be detrimental.
You could just show up and call out your kid's name.
Every time I drop the kids off, they're like, please turn down the music. And it's not even like embarrassing me. It's like classical music in the morning. It's like, Dad, please turn that down. Turn that down.
Yeah.
Golly.
Your kids, man. We're listening to I'm Blue, Dabba D.
Eiffel 65. Yeah, Eiffel 65. Yeah.
Man, wow.
What does he say? Okay.
That's the kind of music we listen to every morning.
What are the real lyrics?
I'm blue. If I was green, I would die.
If I was green, I would die. What do you think they are?
It's Dabba.
That's what they are?
It's I'm blue. Dabba dee, dabba die. But it's really saying, if I was green, I would die.
I'm blue. And if I'm green, I would die.
I thought it was Dabba dee, dabba die.
It is. It's called Dabba dee, dabba die.
Oh.
But I swear they're saying, if I was green, I would die.
I'm blue.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm blue and Dabba's green, I would die.
You have to do the voice. You got to put the filter on it. You can't just show up to a podcast.
I'm blue, if I was green, I would die. If I was green, I would die.
What a banger. What a banger.
It is a good song. Which brings me to my next section. This section is called Iconic versus Good. And so it's where I'm going to throw out a song at you and you tell me if this song is...
Can we do that song first, though?
Is either... That would be... Well, I think
it's definitely
already,
iconic.
Yeah. Is this an iconic song? Is this a good song? And I feel like we trade like iconic songs and we call them great songs, but they might not be great songs, but they are iconic.
Yeah.
So that's my whole thing with this question.
I would love to be put on the spot. Rifle off a bunch of songs. Well, some are iconic and good.
I think that they can be.
Of course.
First song, The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
I'm going to give it both, dude. Iconic and good.
Iconic and good.
Oh, yeah. It's just right there. What kind of vibe does that put you in, dude?
That one's,
I'm feeling great.
Really good.
I mean, that one's too easy, though.
It is a good, I feel like it's a good song. I was at the doctor the other day and it came on. I love when those joyful songs come on at sad moments though, because I'm like alone in the waiting room and
there's a soap
opera on mute and I'm just sitting there 30 minutes late and out of this small little radio, you know, with no bass just comes, you know. It put me in a better mood. But then I was like, is it putting me in a better mood because it's good or because it's iconic?
It's great.
It's both.
I wouldn't say it's...
It's both. Yeah, it's just feel good. I mean, there's only a handful of songs that trigger that software in your brain. Bobby McFerrin.
What's...
Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It triggers the same software for me. Lion Sleeps Tonight triggers the same software.
Joy Program, Engage.
Yeah.
Joy Program, Engage.
You wrote that in AutoCAD.
Yeah.
Joy, run 90 minutes.
That's a good computer voice.
Thank you.
come on. Lion Sleeps Tonight, iconic and great. You can't argue that. You can't argue that.
All right. What about?
Here, let me get one.
Wait, I already got some.
Oh, you did?
American Pie. Don McLean.
Is it iconic? Probably to somebody else, different era.
I would argue that it's iconic, but I would say it's not a very good song.
What's the lyrical context for the era?
What do you mean?
I mean, you know, was that around like the war times, the songs? Was it a war song?
I don't know. It kind of feels like if Counting Crows was in that era, that's what would pop out.
Totally.
Like, it's very Adam Duritz-y.
It's like early
90s. Call the queen who broke the glass, who drove the car, and then we're in the clouds. She drove me to insanity. That's my best Adam Duritz impression. It's like none of it really goes together, but it sounds like a mess of Dylan influence. You know?
Don McLean had some items up for auction this last month.
On Reverb.com?
Nope. On Julian's Auctions.
What is Julian's Auctions? That sounds like a Silk Road thing.
No, it's not. It's above board. It's above the table. Steve Vai also had some stuff on there. But it's one of those things where they'll do these, you know, celebrities sell off a bunch of their stuff. They were selling, I don't know, it's like there was a bunch of movie stars that were selling old things.
Yeah.
A Nicki Minaj outfit that she wore for something. But Don McLean had some guitars I bid on one of his Martin, a 1940s Martin guitar. I did not win the auction at $2,000. Go figure.
Shoot.
You know, I just, you know, might as well just throw that darts at the board, right?
Come on.
At some point, I'm going to get a bullseye.
Give me 10 darts.
Yeah.
Give me 10 darts.
I did want he had a nice Hoffy acoustic guitar case that was not getting any attention.
Oh. Just the case was for sale.
But you didn't get it.
The case was for sale. No,
it
was a silent auction. Yeah. So I bid online.
Oh, so you don't know what anybody else.
No. $200, didn't get it. That would have been a steal for that case.
What's this website called?
Julian's Auctions.
Is that a thing? Is that like a website?
I've never heard of this.
Yeah. I mean, I got hip to it because Jason from Premier Guitar Magazine said, dude, check it out. Steve Vai is selling this motorcycle, you should buy it.
And you got it.
No, I didn't. I was gonna bid on some stuff, but then I was like, dude, I want a Vi guitar. But then I was like,
but you can sell your motorcycle on there too?
I guess.
It's not just music equipment.
It's just whatever stuff, man.
It's Nicki Minaj clothes and guitars.
Dude, I think they sold Les Paul's passport on this website after he died. I'm dead serious. They sold Les Paul's passport.
This isn't just a website for anybody to sell anything. It's celebrities, right?
Well, I think it's...
I'm writing this
Or maybe some sort of large estate thing.
Okay.
You know, it might be some... Maybe the COO of Medtronic or something.
So it sounds like a curated auction site.
Yes.
Like this is... You're not going to get up here and throw up your Levi's belt you got for Christmas from grandma.
But not unless you're Don Henley.
Unless you're Don Henley.
You could have gotten that guitar for $2,000.
Well, no, I think it went for like $9,000.
Oh, that's what you
did. Yeah, I bid a couple grand.
Okay.
You know, and they always say like, we expect this item to go for $300 to $500. Like, really? A 1940s Martin? You expect this to go?
I think so. I think that AI needs some tweaking for sure.
Yeah. So I'll sometimes get on there and I'll bid. I've never won anything. I bid on 10 or 12 Prince things, but I'm not the cat that's out there buying collectibles and... I don't have that kind of disposable income for that.
Yeah.
I have a YouTube channel to
I got a YouTube fund. Channel to feed. Exactly. Yeah. There's two in collectibles. I could never get into collectibles. Like this belonged to, it's for some reason that, but I also have very low levels of sentimental value or emotion.
Mm. You're talking about from
even
people,
like within my family, like, it's like this belonged to your great, great grandfather. And I'm like, why did you give that to me? Because now I feel like I have to hold on to it and I really don't want to.
Oh,
I feel like I got to pass
it on.
I
wish I had that.
So you have high levels of sentimental attachment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What's something that you feel like you're gonna pass down to your kids that maybe that was handed on to you?
There's not a lot of family heirlooms. I mean, there's some stuff, like some of the...
Or maybe something that belonged to you.
Well, we have some stuff that my grandparents brought over from China. Yeah. That was dispersed through the family after my grandparents passed away. And I think for me, the stuff that I'm going to pass down that I'll feel, you know, some of my guitars, like my main axes or something, you know, it'd be nice to keep them in the family.
Yeah.
You know, I'd hate to see them go Julian's Auctions after one generation, you know.
Let's at least wait one more generation.
Be nice to get to the point where like, the, you know, they put on that, the musical instrument thing at the Metropolitan Art Museum or something.
Uh-huh.
Be pretty cool someday to get to the level where some place would care enough to be like, hey, can we put your guitar on our wall for 5 months?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty dope.
That'd be pretty cool. I'm sentimental about we have a fridge in the garage and it was the fridge from our first house, but it was like a fridge
of all
from,
things.
They're like 1970s something
it's
fridge.
Just a whirlpool.
I mean, it's gross and it looks nasty and I have to like keep wiping mold off the sides and stuff.
But it still works, doesn't
it? But it still works.
What's with the fridges nowadays? I bought a fridge 4 years ago and it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Computer broken, system down, buy a new one.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, you know? Man, I don't know about that.
My brother-in-law has a fridge from his grandparents. It's like one of the yellow bean tanks that are in there. And he said the only thing that they've ever done to it is like swap out the power cord in there, and it still flies. I think appliances are moving back towards more the analog technology because they realize they last a lot longer. Like the Speed Queen movement. Washer and dryer. You have Speed
Lightning
Queen.
Lightning McQueen. Yeah, I'm down
Speed
with Lightning.
Queen. Speed What's a Queen. Speed Washer Queen? And dryer. It's they're made in, I don't know, it says it on the tag, but it's like, it's they outfitted a lot of the laundromats.
I know for exactly. Decades. Yeah, I know.
And Speed it's Queen. Just like industrial strength washer and dryers, nothing fancy, but like
down, dude.
Heavy parts that don't break down. And then they started breaking into the home market. Speed Queen. Check it out.
That was my nickname in high school. In my punk band. Oh,
Speed Queen over
That's
here.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was me.
Speed Queen.
Yeah.
I think fridges need to take the same turn. It's about time. Okay. We can be sentimental okay. about what the about, fridge.
Are we gonna hit that with pedal boards? Everybody's going didge. We've had the talk that it's hard to do overdrives, didge.
It is. It can be done, but it is.
Can be done.
It is hard.
We've heard some nice sounding overdrives digital, but so much of our world is going digital. Are we going to end up, I mean, a lot of people already, it's.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to not have analog and then go back? I don't think so.
I think we'll always have analog.
Yeah.
Just like.
We can count on it.
Yeah. I think people will be reviving old hardware, you know, like mm-hmm. that are decades old. And I think people will always be designing products that are purely based on analog because there is a charm about it, whether you can actually tell or not. In a lot of cases you can, but a lot of cases you can't. But there is a charm about something organic happening between like components and electricity and
yeah.
and line like signal and this yeah. is what comes out and it doesn't get processed. It turns into something magical. Just the cars are the same way, you know. People want new cars that have all the tricks and GPS and stuff like that. My car IQ is super low, but like auto braking and accident protection and parallel parking automation.
Yeah.
But we also want to drive cars that are like 30 years old for some reason, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And
I
we want
that power.
Like my car is from 2000 and I like that it's from the year 2000, you know, it's 20 years old. I think pedals are the same way. Guitars are the same way.
Do you think there's any piece of gear right now that people are just like totally stoked on? And we're going to look at it in the same way that we do now to the Line 6 Bean.
I think everything that people are stoked on now, people will look at it like we do the Line 6 Bean. I think it's just a natural progression of technology. But then at the same time, people then go back. And then once it gets like a 2 to 3 decade buffer, people then go back to it, mm-hmm. you know, go, oh, this really was cool. Like the Lexicon stuff, mm. you know, or the Alesis stuff, or yeah. people are now bringing those back out and being like, there was actually something magical about this specific unit, you know?
Yeah.
I think it'll be the same way. What's going to be different about the world in 50 years? Speaking of that, what do you think? What's it going to look like?
Depends on a lot of things. Is the big one going to happen in the next 50 years?
The comet.
Well, I'm talking about the earthquake.
Oh, the big one.
Yeah.
The big one. The Yellowstone one or the California one?
The California one. Like, will Oklahoma City be...
beach town?
Beachfront property.
Man, that's why we're here. Yeah. We're hoping that happens.
Yeah. In 50 years, will Scottsdale be the place that people want to go retire? Or will it be just a barren wasteland?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Exactly.
Now that's on the world standpoint. As far as technology, as far as all that goes, I don't know, man. I think, you know, the Kurzweil thing, I think...
Teach us about the Kurzweil thing.
The singularity, you know, the exponential growth of things and technology. But I think we're at a nice, nice, nice arc that, you know, for our grandparents to be able to see... such a wild shift in things. It would be foolish for us to not think the in the rate that technology is expanding and growing now, be foolish for us to not just have our minds completely open to, you know, when we're 70, 80 years old for things just to be completely different.
Will Michael Bay still be making movies? We'll still be making
How old is
movies?
Michael Bay?
I don't
30.
Know. I talk about him like I know a lot about him, but I really don't know anything. What's your Michael Bay story?
I don't have a Michael Bay story.
You had a story.
No, as far as like somebody's son or daughter is a big fan.
Oh.
like you were saying, oh, Michael Bay's son was a big fan of shark fin.
Shark chum wave.
Shark chum wave, yeah. Trey Anastasio, one of his kids was a big Wolfpack fan. So we got to open for him. That's how he got hip to us. Oh. And we opened for him at Red Rocks, and then we got to hang out with him and become friends or whatever. And then also once we heard that Flea's daughter was a fan of Wolfpack. And that was kind of our in with Flea for a second. Still never met Flea.
I think it's time. He's probably listening right now.
He probably is.
So
I'd love to meet Flea.
John Frusciante, Anthony, if you're listening right now, we need a hookup. We need a line set real quick.
You want a hot tip on the Chili Peppers?
Yeah, I do.
Hot tip us.
Not a lot of people know about this.
Should we have a sound bit for not a lot of people know about this? This is exclusive information.
Yeah. Not a lot of people know about this.
Get ready on 98.9.
One of the greatest videos on the internet. Chad Smith, National Anthem. Okay. Just look it up. Chad Smith, National Anthem. I think it's at a Clippers game.
Just a drum?
Like, yes.
National Anthem?
He's playing the National Anthem on a drum kit. I'm guessing it's 09. It's probably between Blood Sugar Sex Magic and One Hot Minute, if I'm looking at the video correctly in my head. My guess is 95, 96. Clippers game. He's got a wired set of headphones. It's like the old, like not quite airplane looking, but not quite studio looking headphones. And he's playing the National Anthem on a drum kit and it along to a track. And it's absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Well, hey, what's a question that you wish I would have asked you today for our last question?
I don't know.
What's your favorite song you've ever written?
Ooh.
Oh my gosh.
I always wonder that whenever like an artist put out a new album. Like, here's my favorite, but I wonder.
Welcome to Minneapolis.
If this is a song that they like, were like, ah, dang.
Yeah.
I guess we'll put it up.
There's a song of mine called Home that I really like. It's different than
John
a lot of
Baptiste?
The rest of my.
Is that the
with
one?
John, yeah.
Is that
yeah.
Philip Phillips? Home.
Different Home. Wait. Yeah. His is on the other side of the street. Yeah.
Okay. That's a good song.
It features John, yeah.
Yeah.
But that one, I wrote it with a friend of mine in my living room. Excuse me. The song Home. I think it's different than the rest of my catalog, but I just feel really good about the feeling that it gives me. It has a certain thing to it that has, there's a certain depth to it that I didn't plan on when we were writing it. We just wrote it and then it kind of ended up finding a lot of depth. And I just feel like the pieces of the composition came together in a way that really works nice. It's very approachable, but it also kind of triggers something very deep and human and organic anytime I play it.
I would agree. I feel like that every time I listen to it.
Thank you.
And if I could play it, I would.
It's an E-flat. I don't know why it's an E-flat.
Did you just tune the guitar down or did you just...
No, I played it E-flat.
Standard and such a baller.
Of course he did.
Oh my gosh.
No, I mean, it's...
Did you use your reverse capo?
No, I use the. Isn't there some pedal that you could that will automatically?
Oh yeah,
yeah, I do. I use one. It's amazing.
Does it work nice?
See, it's a good tracking pedal and it tracks the tone really well.
I like
the Digitech Drop. Everybody,
yeah, that's what the one. I like the Digitech Whammy, but I cannot stand the latency.
Yeah,
maybe for your playing,
and you're smarter than me, and you might be able to detect it on the Digitech Drop, but I can't. So, like, I'm always, but if I'm playing like a song in G, like I'll turn it on like a whole step down, and I'll play like an A form just to get some more meat sound, you know?
Yeah.
Or even sometimes we're playing like in G, and I'll play like in B form to really, you know, let that when I want to play a four and get that C to go or the E to go.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, it's really nice.
That's cool.
So, yeah, you should go buy one, or you can borrow mine. Hey, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Dude, happy
really
to be
appreciate
here.
Appreciate it. This is wonderful. Super blessed by your appearance.
Thank you.
So if you're listening, what you're going to do is you're going to get on Spotify or Apple Music and you're going to favorite Corey Wong.
That's
it's just
right.
Corey Wong, right?
Yeah.
Corey Wong, not Corey Wong Band.
No, just okay. Corey Wong.
Corey Wong. And then you're going to go to Fearless Flyers and you do the same thing. And then you're going to go to Wolfpack and you're going to do the exact same
all
thing.
All three.
And then you're going to go to Ticketmaster and search all those names and you're going to buy tickets to the show.
That's right.
Of all, and they're all going to be at Madison Square Garden or Red Rocks.
Also, so. Get you some Toltex 241 shirts.
That's right.
Toltex 241. You remember.
Not,
I wrote
not
down,
just.
So, but you remember yeah. without writing it down. Good job.
Get the Corey Wong shirts. Yeah.
That's amazing. Thanks the
graphite,
for being on today.
The graphite gray.
The graphite gray?
It's the darker. Yeah, that's the.
Does it have a different feel? Does the graphite gray feel
yeah,
different?
It's kind of, it's not quite tri-blend. It feels, it occasionally looks like a tri-blend. It's kind of that heathered gray, but it's uh-huh. it's much darker. Yeah. It's kind of a hybrid between a heather gray and a tri-blend gray.
Okay.
The graphite.
Tri-blend gray. Yeah, I gotta do
yeah
this.
It's nice. For the Walrus. Very nice.
Walrus merch. You know,
yeah.
recalibration.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for the shirt tips today, man.
Of course.
I really appreciate it.
Happy to be here for it.
And if you're listening right now, Toltex 241. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you. See you on the next show.
Peace. Yeah.